And the
podcast
begins with a song of rebellion.
How can this
podcast
be my life?
CD Burners.
Hello.
Hello. So now it's
we're good.
Is it?
I think
fine.
We're good.
It's fine.
I can't hear it.
I mean, that's how to start podcasts off anyway. Go. You guys, are we recording? Can you hear it? Does it sound good? That's how to start every podcast off anyway.
Classic podcast, guys.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's fine. We have to do it every once in a while.
Oh, well, today's setup was a little rough, but we're good. We're cruising.
You want to know what we did to fix it? Is I just put my hand down there and zhuzhed up a bunch of wires, and I was like, cool, done.
And it fixed it.
Did you want to know? I did yesterday. You know, I told you the AirPod Maxes or whatever, they're like fucking me up.
Yeah.
What I did yesterday was took them off of my head and slammed them into my car door. And then put them back. I went bam, 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 and then put them back
on.
Did
it fix?
Yeah.
Wow. Sometimes all you have to do is bang shit around, right?
Sometimes violence is the answer.
Hi, Timmy.
Stinks.
Yeah, you got to hit him with the Old Spice.
Well, Cheryl got me this shampoo that it sounds like when cats barf, like, hui.
Oh, yeah. Wee.
Yeah, it sounds like, hui. But that's like what, I don't know what it's called, but she got me the dog shampoo that was like,
I gotcha.
I think she got it when you guys were in
Utah.
Yeah,
she was telling us about it. Timmy, you're gonna smell so good
because I got yelled at by the people on the podcast
because his pH is different.
Yeah, which you guys are just wrong. I mean, like, he went outside in the rain today. You think that the rain in LA doesn't have like the worst pH in the entire world? That you guys are just, you're fucking dumb.
Okay, guys. Well, today we're talking about a monster of an album, Blink-182, Enema of the State. This album came out on June 1st, 1999. Joni has to remind us, that's before I was born.
99.
Yeah, what were you doing summer 99?
Summer 99, I was like peak freshman.
Ooh.
Like peak freshman or in like sophomore year. You remember that guy Todd that I met
in Park City
in Utah?
Yeah.
So he drove a van that he got decaled like the Mystery Machine.
Okay.
And it was like a handicap van, so the front seat, it would turn out, like it would turn so you could go out of it, and there is a button that like slid the seat down. So you could stay strapped in, you could stay like buckled in, but kind of be outside of the vehicle while you were driving. It is really dangerous. And so we would drive around and really hit Enema of the State in a big, big way. I mean, it was like in a lot of ways it like went with the Jackass culture. Like it was that, you know, it was like, that's what they say. White people have no culture.
We 99 is the peak of white people culture.
It's the best.
Like you had Woodstock 99, Limp Bizkit, like Britney Spears and NSYNC were dominating
all the boy bands.
Airwaves. Yeah, dude, it was quite the time.
And then this came out, and this is like, you say the white people have no, this is like prime time, like hell yeah. And that's, I've said this before on the podcast where it's like, or maybe I have, but like I have thought that growing up, and when I was growing up, I was like, man, our generation sucks ass. We don't have any like awesome shit. Like we don't have any of the stuff that, you know, and if you think about the 80s, you can clearly see the 80s. You think about the 90s, you can clearly see the 90s. And like, I was like, man, we don't have anything. And like, it seemed so not special. And looking back, it's the best. It's obviously just the best.
The 2000s were sick. This album was platinum by October 99. So what is that? That's 4 months. It went platinum. Huge, huge album. Then now it went triple platinum by January 2000 and five-time platinum by February 2001. Overall, it sold over 15 million copies worldwide. The highest chart position, number 9 on the Billboard 200.
I don't know what any of that means.
You know what it means. I don't to know what sell it means. 15
no, I don't.
Million
what
records.
In okay, so for instance, who sold that many records?
Nobody. The Beatles. Beatle.
Beatle sold that. I mean, I obviously Beatle sold that many records, Thriller. But like, what is that?
Thriller is notoriously like the highest selling album.
I thought it was
time,
the Eagles.
Right. Didn't I feel like the Eagles or Thriller?
Yeah. I thought it was the Eagles, which is like, so what a weird thing. Like what's like a list at that time amount of records.
Thriller
to sell?
Is the best selling album of all time. Sold 70 million copies.
Okay. So that's the best selling album of all time.
Yeah.
70 million copies.
Yeah.
Who's not Michael Jackson? Who's like, what's the, what's
how many?
Yeah. Like, what do I have to compare this to?
Okay. Limp Bizkit at the time. Let's see. Hot dog flavored water.
Should have been significant other, I think.
Okay.
Or $3 bill, y'all. Like just something.
As of October 99, $3 bill, y'all sold 1.8 million copies.
So this is like significantly much, much more.
Yeah. Significant other went pretty big too.
Yeah. It kicked ass. Was that the one with fucking the Exhibit song?
Yeah.
And Together Now?
So that one has sold 16 million.
Okay, cool. Well, that's good to know. Okay, so what did Backstreet Boys do?
What is their album called? I don't know.
I don't know either. It's probably called
Backstreet's Back.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Backstreet's Back album sales.
Whoa. 75 million albums worldwide.
Isn't that more than Michael Jackson?
Yeah.
Didn't we just say Michael Jackson?
Okay, well, that's wrong. Okay, so that's their collective. Backstreet Boys album Backstreet Back sold over 13 million. So this has more album sales than Backstreet's Back.
Okay, so now I think we have a good idea of what 15 million looks like. Because sometimes I'm just like, okay, what are these? Who gives a shit? I have nothing to compare this to, like what numbers? And so I think that just gives it a context of being like, this is fucking big. Like this is a big ass album.
Right.
And especially for what the music was.
Yes. It's punk, it's skate punk, and it's funny and it's silly. It's juvenile at some points. There are some emotional moments throughout, but overall it's just such a fun album and a fun band. They're a fun band.
I think that I don't think that I've given Blink enough credit on this podcast when I'm always like, my favorite albums are like Clarity and Through Being Cool and shit like that. And I really don't think that I give Blink as much because this is, it's literally the fucking best album. It's so good.
Yeah. Well, I think it's not an emo album. And yeah, a lot of times we're talking about emo albums and this is like skate punk, pop punk.
Yeah, I think the difference is with this is like there's never a time where I don't want to listen to this.
This is a timeless album. I was thinking that.
Like I can put this on at any given time, sad, mad, frustrated, happy, whatever. It's always good. And some of the other albums, I'm like, I have to be in a mood.
Mm-hmm.
This is just, and I think maybe that's kind of the general vibe of why this went so far is, you know, it also did the thing where I remember, you know, me and my friends were like the alt kids but we hung out with like, you know, football guys and partied with all those guys. And this kind of was like the catalyst that brought everybody together. Like they all loved it too. They were like, oh shit, maybe what you guys like is awesome.
Yeah, I feel like Blink-182 is so relatable to everybody. Like they were the guys that you wanted to be or like be friends with, whether you were like a jock or a punk or whatever, like you wanted to be those guys. Like they were good looking, they were funny, they were talented, but they weren't like, I don't think that they were like inaccessible. You know, like you wanted to be them. Like I was reading Mark Hoppus's sister wrote a book and for like the 10 years of Blink. And she said that Tom DeLonge won Homecoming King at one point, which I think is like the perfect example of can't be burping on the pod. The perfect example of like, he's literally a popular kid, but he wasn't like, you know, the popular snobby kid. He
was
like
awesome.
The guy that everybody liked, like the student body president almost, you know,
the guy you met, Todd, that's kind of like how we were a little bit. Like he was, I think, president.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just like this goofy guy. And they voted me, they made a position for me, senior class representative.
Mm.
Didn't exist before that. And I understand. You don't have to be, you know, we've got those like the tropes of what the, is that what?
Yeah, but, yeah.
Of the things. And, but it was also like prime American Pie time. Like those movies, like you got to think about what's happening in entertainment also. And I think that, I don't know, right? Like absolutely, man, such a moment for white suburban guys like me.
So this album was the first one to feature Travis Barker, which is crazy. Before this, they had a different drummer named Scott Rayner, who is a good drummer, but he's not Travis Barker.
He's like not that good.
Yeah, he's a decent drummer, but he's not.
Like, not great. Really, kind of.
Yeah.
It's like, so.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's, but Travis is he's the magic spark that, like, pulls it all together. Because they're at the end of the day, they are only a three-piece, which is crazy, because it feels so full. And it's because Travis is, like, filling that dead space with drumming that is, like, so interesting and different than anything that was happening at the time.
So I had to write. One of my classes for school was pick two like YouTube videos on drummers or like a YouTube clip on drums and explain like, you know, what, cause we've been learning about like syncopation and shit like that. Just like timing and stuff. And I was like, obviously everybody's going to pick Travis Barker, but the reasons that I gave why, was because for Blink, you know, or at least I guess in any band, you're like, don't really think of drums as a main instrument. Like you're like, that's just, you're the drums. And I think for a lot of people, this brought drums into their life as it's kind of on the same level as like vocals. It's kind of the same thing. Like I remember.
It's like melodic in a way that he's playing.
The thing is like, it's just as catchy. His drumming is just as catchy as the vocals and the guitar. And like when you're in your car, you're kind of singing the drum parts as much as you're singing the fucking vocals.
Totally.
And I don't know if there have definitely been parts in drums and drummers that have done that in the past. But I think this was like, you're looking at drums as a standalone instrument that's up front as well.
Yeah, 100%. That's a great way to put it. So I guess they were having some trouble with Scott Rayner. He fell victim to the disease of alcoholism.
He had the crippling disease of alcoholism.
And
he did the steps.
He
had to have Bill.
They kicked him out. And they had Travis Barker step in for them. At the time, Travis was the drummer of the Aquabats. You know what his name in the Aquabats was? I don't know why it sticks with me, but like sometimes throughout the day, I just like, since I've been doing this research, I just like say it in my head.
No, I don't know.
Baron Von Tito.
Oh, dude. Have I told the Aquabat story?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. So I saw the Aquabats when I was really, really young, and it was the first time, and I think I saw it with Travis Barker in it, but I didn't know nobody. It wasn't. You know, he wasn't Travis Barker at the time.
He was
Baron Von Tito at the time. And it was the first time that I had seen a band command the audience to do something funny. They just had everybody sit down. It was like, it was so funny.
I remember they used to do that at Warped Tour.
It was awesome. And it was just like, it was like in a venue, like a disgusting, shitty venue, and everybody's sitting down. And it was the first time. That was like the only thing I remember from that show. So, I mean, as small as that might seem and as silly as that might seem, it's something that stuck with me out of all of the shows that I've seen forever. So when we played the Warped Tour cruise, I don't know, I'm sure I've told this on like other podcasts or ours in general, but when we went on the Warped Tour cruise, there's like a day off. And so we got off in Mexico TJ got blackout drunk, spoke Spanish like really well. It was all,
I think.
No, you do. You like some, I actually think that we talked about it. I think, like when you drink, you somehow can speak another language actually better. There's scientific studies to it, but whatever, you ended up being Mexican. And so I went to, you have like a couple of, options of things you can do. And one of the ones where we landed in Mexico or docked in Mexico was fly to the, they're not pyramids. And yeah,
they call them pyramids, don't they?
No, they don't call them pyramids. And they actually yell at you if you call them pyramids. They're calendars.
The Chichen Itza.
I don't know how to say it. It's the Tichachitlan.
Chichen Itza.
I don't know how to say it, but it's the pyramids that are in the middle of like the forest over there, which are absolutely amazing. One of the most incredible things I've seen in real life. And relating this back to Blink, aliens obviously built that. There's just no fucking way in a million years. You stand in front of it and you clap, it claps back at you. But if you move a certain distance to like the right or left, and it doesn't. And when you clap at it, it's as loud as if you were clap. It's absolutely mind blowing. That was the thing that I decided to do for the day. And, you know, there was only a limited amount of people that can go to it, and you had to buy your tickets like ahead of time or whatever. So it was literally me and the Aquabats and like Eric Tobin from like Hopeless. The Aquabats are in full.
Well, you had to take a seaplane.
Yeah. We like had to take it. That's what I mean. Plane. Yeah. 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 So you have to like take a fucking plane over the fucking forest to go to the pyramids. And I was like, if this crashes, like if I crash in this, they're going to be like, I'm going to be known as the guy that like died with the Aquabats, because they're all going to be in their outfits and they're going to find all the Aquabat outfit guys. And they'd be like, that's how I would have gone down.
The Aquabats, the president of Hopeless Records, and one other individual were all.
I would have been the one other individual with the Aquabats that died. And I mean, I think it's like, it's a pretty reasonable thing to think, because the fucking planes are scary and sketchy, but like just so funny flying to fucking the pyramids. And, you know, I'm in the back and all of the guys are in there. Awkward. Outfits. It is so fucking funny. And they're awesome. They're so funny. They're so nice. They're 100% like good hearted, like ska punk guys. Awesome. And they just like took a bunch of pictures, like as the Aquabats in front of the pyramids. And it was just really cool. It was a really fun and funny experience.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. It was just like a good core memory. And it's just a funny that I would have died with the Aquabats.
That's awesome.
Anyway,
I love that story. But yeah, Aaron from the Aquabats said he was standing side stage when Travis first filled in for Blink. And he remembers thinking, okay, that's the new Blink 182. And we should probably start looking for a new drummer now. So you could tell like the magic was instant as soon as he started playing with the band. But it's really interesting because he doesn't have writing credits on this album. Even though he was basically helping them write the songs. He was going down to San Diego from Riverside for about 2 weeks straight and like working on the record with Mark and Tom. But at that point, he was still just like a hired gun. Like they paid him like hourly or daily or whatever. But he was, you know, making suggestions and contributing to the creative process and like suggesting new, you know, tempos and new ways to approach these songs. And, they ended up like rectifying it. I think with the next record, would Take Off Your Pants and Jacket. They were like, he was like, all right, you guys, I'm in the band. Like I'm in the music videos. We gotta fix this.
Well, it's funny because like, if you listen to Dude Ranch where that guy Scott was drumming, I mean, it's like pretty damn obvious that like Scott didn't write the parts that were on Enema of the State. Like it's really, really, it's a humongous difference. I'm not saying he's a bad drummer, but it's like, I don't know, like kind of not a good, maybe I am saying he's kind of a bad drummer, but like the difference is it's not even comparing.
He's just not Travis Barker.
It's just not.
It's a regular drummer and then one of the greatest drummers of all time.
Maybe the greatest drummer of all time. Yes. For real.
Yeah,
maybe
for real.
The greatest drummer of all time. And there's a lot, there's so many amazing things about that because they're playing these unserious, fun, you know, kind of easy songs, you know, kind of like easy for, you know, like Zach from Fiddler, he would always just tell me, he would say this thing. He was like, yeah, I got four chords in a dream. You know what I mean? And I think there's like other versions of that, but it's that stuck with me. But that's kind of like what Blink is. And it's so awesome to see like two guys who are like great songwriters, but maybe not the best at their instruments. And then the best guy at his instrument in a punk band. Like it's a fun, it makes the entire thing even more fun. Like it makes it, do you know what I mean? Like it makes the thing awesome. Like the fact that the guy, like Tom, Mark and Tom, like maybe weren't at that time, like amazing. And then, but you know, it was there, like the songs were there and you have somebody who's just so incredible within that style of music. It's like, I don't know if the word is like juxtaposition or like whatever it is. It just was so unique and fun and different. And, I've never met a person who doesn't like Blink, by the way.
Really?
I do they have haters?
I think at the time they did. Especially with this album, because it was like the first album that they did with a really big budget and, you know, they were getting like a lot of promotion and doing these like really high profile music videos. They were like all over TRL. And I think, you know, we've talked about it before at the time, but like, it was really not fucking cool to sell out, you know? So I think in that respect, they did have haters that were like, oh, this is not punk anymore. And then Tom DeLonge has been quoted as saying, like, you know what's actually punk is going against punk and selling out.
Yeah, he's right. Like, he is. And I don't think they kept it a secret that they're like, yeah, we're going to be a big band.
Yeah.
We want, like, people to have fun and like us. And, like, what band doesn't want, you know, besides, actually, there's this chick that I've been listening to. It's really funny. The Twitter discourse is that she like hates her fans and Jane Remover. I really love Jane Remover, but like every day it's for some reason it's on my algorithm that like, she like blocks her fan club and like does all this funny shit. And like her fans like are like, she hates us. It's just really funny, but I you don't meet a lot of artists and I don't know if she does. I don't know if that's true. I think it might just be like super fans looking way too much into shit or like diving too far into a artist's personal life where they're like, stop.
Yeah. I mean, Chappell has to do that too.
Yeah. So like, it's just really funny, but like no artist that like wants their music to get out there is like, don't want people to listen to my music.
Yeah.
It's just not, that's not real.
Yeah.
And so I think that it was awesome that they kept it real. But like, I mean, have you ever heard anybody be like, I don't like Blink?
Not that I can think of.
I cannot think of one person that doesn't like Blink.
You know, you talked about doing hoodlum shit to this album, like hanging out of a car or whatever. I was much younger. This really shows the age gap, I think, between us.
Yeah, that's because a pretty significant difference.
My introduction to this is singing All the Small Things in my fifth grade talent show with my friend Tyler.
Really?
Yes.
Fifth grade?
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
He had the CD, and I remember just, like, rocking out to it in his room. Like, he showed it to me, and then, like, we sang it together at the fifth grade talent show, and we both had girlfriends at the time, too. And you know the part where it's like, she left me roses by the stairs. We both, like, threw out roses to our little 10-year-old girlfriends.
You got a standing O.
Yeah.
For that.
We were both wearing like huge shorts and backwards hats and stuff.
It's cool you did the talent. That's good that you did that because I did something really, really similar for a freshman year talent show.
Yeah.
It was standing in a row, four guys.
Yeah.
Like just standing in a row with guitars. playing, one would play the introduction to Smells Like Teen Spirit, then stop. And then the next guy would play the introduction to Smells Like Teen Spirit, then stop. And then the next guy. And we just did that for however long the talent show was.
How many guys?
It was four guys. It was me and then like four other dudes. Wow. And we just.
That's so funny.
It's so funny.
Okay. Jumping back into the album here.
Isn't that funny?
Sorry to derail. That's hilarious. The album cover, iconic though. I remember like being, you know, in fifth grade and being like, oh, who's this? You know, the album cover features a nurse. It is porn star Janine Lindemolder. And she's pulling a glove onto her hand. And the album, I guess, was originally supposed to be called Turn Your Head and Cough. And that's why she is putting on this glove. Doesn't really make as much sense with an enema, because you're not really doing anything like that with an enema. But yeah, the original album was supposed to be called Turn Your Head and Cough. I guess there was also another name that they were tossing around for a while, which was Viking Wizard Eyes. And that became their LLC name, Viking Wizard Eyes. That's a fast fact that I got from Alan.
It's a pretty good fast fact. It's also, I was thinking about it, it's so fucking funny, dude. There's a, you know, I was looking up, like, you know, whatever, pop punk albums of all time. The top two are literally named like Dookie and Enema of the State. It's just like about shitting.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's so, and it's so also fucking amazing that like Green Day will like dispute that. They'll be like, we're not pop punk, but like there would be no whatever. And that's again, that's also one of my top 10.
Put it on the list.
I would love to do Dookie. I have a note in here also that like nobody has made like the word diarrhea sound beautiful. And Tom does it.
Does he?
Yeah. He goes, he's a player, diarrhea. Like it's just,
that's what he's saying.
I don't know what he's saying. I just know he's saying diarrhea. And it's so fucking funny that you're like singing diarrhea.
Yeah.
Like I was listening to, you know, I know this album back of my fucking hand and like, but having to listen to it and report on it for you guys, like objectively somebody like singing diarrhea is very funny. Like it is just funny.
It is funny. And like, that's one of the reasons why people love this band, because it's so like, it's very funny and immature, but not in like a off-putting way. Like it's funny.
You can also blink 182 any three syllable word.
Like what?
Give me a three syllable word.
John Mayer.
It's like you can just do that. You know, any three syllable word, you can blink 182 it.
That's funny.
Any of it. You can just blink 182 any three syllable word. I wasn't on key, but you know what I'm saying.
Peppercorn.
Do it.
Peppercorn.
Any three syllable word. You can blink. You can blink 182 it. Now that's a fast fact that I made up.
Here's another one that is not made up. There are a couple of editions of this album, and you can tell from one small detail. On the first editions of this album, the Blink 182 on the nurse's chesticles is a capital B. And then on all the rest of it, it's a lowercase b.
Why was that?
I don't really know. I think it was like a Mark decision. Mm. He has like come to the forefront and like said, like, whenever it's like, that was like his choice. He wanted it to always be lowercase, Blink-182.
Good. And it's, you want to know what it's, I feel like that's one of those decisions that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And like, when I think about their band logo, I think about it in lowercase. That's cool.
But like the other guys in the band have, you know, typed it out and done it with the capital, and like other people don't really care. But Mark was always the one who was like, no, it needs to be lowercase.
That's awesome. I like that hill to die on.
Yeah. I think if you ever like go to a record store and you just go to the B's, always look for that first edition with the capital.
I think that's a great, great hill to die on. It's funny because like I never watched any I just always loved Blink, so I never watched any interviews with them. Like, I watched the, it's like, I guess a documentary they did with Cut You Up, because I loved Cut You Up, which was a band that they like took on tour. It doesn't, I don't know if they're a band anymore, but.
Well, there's the Urethra Chronicles.
This one's called like Riding in Cars with Boys, I think. But that's kind of the only thing I watched from Blink. And mm-hmm. I've never, because I was just like, I just love Blink. I don't care. I didn't need to. I kind of got everything that I needed to know about them from the music, which was.
That was enough for you.
That was it. I got who they were from the music. I didn't need to like watch interviews. So like I was watching all these interviews last night. Like the only person I think I've actually, besides like doing research for the podcast, the only person I think I've went out of my way to be like, I want to know what they have to say is Porter Robinson. Mm. I don't think I've ever looked up like an interview with an artist, because I'm like, I get everything I need from that artist if I like them. And I'm just so interested in like, I think Porter Robinson, I just wanted to hear what he had to say. But these interviews are, the Blink interviews are like by far the best interviews that we, out of any artist we have done on the podcast.
Why?
Because they're so funny. It's just like, they are fun. It's like, they're funny. They're funny. They're like what you said. They're like guys that you would want to hang out with. Nothing was like ever so serious. It made you, I don't know. Like it's, I think there's a lot of artists, you know, that try to have to like prove what they are with their interviews and like what they say and how they present themselves. And I think with Blink, the music kind of spoke for itself, and it their interviews only elevated like that point. And they were just fun. It was a fun thing. And there was no like, I need to take a humongous introspective look at anything in my life and like all this shit. And, you know, I think in a lot of the songs you can get that stuff, especially like Adam's Song and all like a lot of the very rare times they've got those like slow, sad songs. But I think that like, they kind of just were a fun band, and that's what we
example.
Need.
Here's a funny example of just them being funny guys. There have been multiple times where they like ask them how they met each other, you know, a common interview question. How'd you guys meet? And in the official bio, it says they met at the Future Proctologists of America camp.
Did they change it all of the time?
Yeah. And then another time they were like, how did the band meet? And Tom said, naked skydiving. And they would just like fuck around like that. And they had funny bits.
Yeah, they had bits. I like the bits. That is something that I know. I didn't watch the new Zane Lowe interview, but I did watch this old Zane Lowe interview, and I think it was really cool. And the new one has like millions of views, because you can tell at the time Zane Lowe was like, okay, I have to like interview this. Like, he obviously liked them, mm-hmm. but they weren't. And it was really interesting to see like the progression of like a pop punk band over the course of like 20 years. And I think there's almost too much information on them for this pod. Like, it's really difficult to get everything that I think I would want to say out on this. And I just like, I do, you know, they started from like not being Blink. They weren't like Blink who they are now. They were like, just like punk guys. They were literally just like poor punk guys, mm-hmm. you know? And I don't know. Usually like punk is rooted in like anger. And I don't know. I think these guys just did it. So, you know, they still went through the like tour. They toured constantly. They have so many funny like tour stories and like van story. They like slept on people's floors. They have all of that stuff. It's like, I think, you know, if you were a young kid now and you're like, you think about Blink, you just think about them doing like arena tours.
Right.
And you don't think about like them putting in that the work and the time and all of the songs also like Mark, they've been like very like transparent about stuff and up front about shit. And Mark, I read this interview where like, or I listened to this thing, or I think I read it, but Mark was like, yeah, I heard I know Dammit's not on this album, but he was like walking through a hotel lobby and heard like a guitar, like a shitty guitar riff that was like you know, elevator music situation. And he's like, I got to go up to my room. And like, no, never mind. No, that was, that was like All the Small Things, I think. One of those songs. But damn, it was like, he was like, yeah, I was listening to a Green Day song. And I just like wanted to play that. And I messed up. Oh, yeah,
and he messed it up. And then,
and like, and it's just like super, that's how awesome music is written. And it's not like, I don't know. I really liked how transparent they were about all of the musicianship and like being in a band.
Yeah, they were very accessible. I mean, Joni wrote down here that during the recording process with Jerry Finn and like when they were actually writing the songs at DLM Studios, they would just like, at this point they had already started to like get famous a little bit and people were pretty hyped on them. But kids would like come and hang out outside the studio and they would just like let them in. They would like unlock the doors and be like, yeah, come hang out. So people were just like hanging out while they were working on stuff. And they've just always been like so fun and accessible and cool. I think we haven't really dove into this at all, but they made this album with Jerry Finn.
Yeah.
Jerry Finn is a legendary producer. He produced Dookie famously with Green Day. He worked on Weezer, the Goo Goo Dolls, MXPX, Sum 41, Newfound Glory. He died in 2008 of a hemorrhage and a heart attack, unfortunately. But rest in peace, Jerry.
Yeah, Jerry Finn was the fucking man.
They said they had a really good time making this album with Jerry Finn. Here's a quote from Mark. He said, recording can get pretty monotonous, but at least we could laugh with Jerry. A typical day would involve multiple takes of part of one song, and then everyone would get naked and mud pile on Jerry.
It sounded awesome. Like it sounded like a lot of fun in the studio. And I tried to look up like stuff about the recording process, and there's a lot of really fun, interesting, funny facts. And like, it was like, what I got out of it is that, like, pretty much that, like, they had a lot of fun. They watched a lot of Mr. Show. Jerry Finn also did one of my favorites. Like, he did Jawbreaker, like Dear You, which was, I think those guys, they really liked that stuff too. And Tom was like, loved Static Prevails by Jimmy World. Like, that was his favorite thing at the time. Another one with Jimmy World being another at the Jimmy. Top.
Didn't Jimmy famously play at Tom DeLonge's wedding? His first wedding? Yeah. I think we talked about that on the Jimmy episode.
I remember.
I guess that, you know, we ask this question every time. I don't know if this still stands. This is kind of an old quote from Mark. But he said that Enema was the first time I listened to one of our albums all the way through and said, that shit sounds exactly the way I want it to sound.
That's awesome. That's really cool. What a cool thing to feel. I heard an interview with Mark where he was this is another reason why they're like so relatable. It's like, they've all been caught like listening to their own albums, like in their cars driving by like fans, yeah. Like super fans.
Yeah.
It's really fucking,
well, these are good albums.
They are the best. I did hear some stories about like Tom in the studio and like the way that they recorded, cause I'm like interested in that shit now. And I don't know if this is true or not, but like they like Tom, like Jerry made Tom do the guitar tone wasn't like thick enough. So there's literally like four guitars over, like it's like four guitars.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's like, that's a lot. That's like a lot of guitars.
You know what I heard that was mind blowing about this whole thing? They did this to tape. They didn't do it to click even. This is all just Travis fucking raw dogging it. No headphones. He's just playing these songs.
Yeah, he didn't like doing it to click.
He busted it all out in 8 hours total.
Yeah, it's the least surprising thing ever. You ever like watch him like do anything? That's like to me not surprising. Like,
but that is crazy.
I mean, it's fucking crazy. The thing is, I'm just like so used to that guy being so good that that's not like a surprising fact to me. I read somewhere that he like memorized the click in his head and just played to that. Like he was like, I, which I don't know. You just have to memorize like a BPM, but he like memorized exactly like what that was. So
this episode of CD Burners is sponsored by iDobe Radio.
Is it?
We all love to get nostalgic, but sometimes we get sick of hearing the same old stuff. What's new in the alternative music scene? That's where Idoby comes in. With the free Idoby app, they find the best new music in emo, pop punk, alternative, metal, and indie week after week for your earballs to enjoy. No subscriptions, just free, live emo, pop punk, alternative, indie, and metal radio stations. Not only does the Idoby app play the future of alternative music, but it also has podcasts with shows hosted by pop punk legends like Sum 41, Simple Plan, Bowling for Soup, and more.
And Fish.
Search Idoby in your app store and download the free Idoby app to start listening today. That's Idoby, I-D-O-B-I. Search and download the free app today.
You know what I really like from Idoby is their Creative Cloud Suite. I love, that's like one of my favorite things that
Idoby
they do.
Illustrator?
That's what I really, really, yeah. really like about them. Kerrang gave this album like the worst review.
Why?
I don't know. They just said it was like, they're like, kind of the sellout situation, like fuck these, like making a joke of fucking punk and shit like that. And I wonder if they ran it back, like every, you know, fucking.
A bunch of silly boys, an imitation of a clown act.
Yeah. They gave it like the worst review. And I wonder if they fucking, they probably ran it back.
In response to some punk zines criticizing Blink for being sellouts, DeLong said, I think it's so much more punk to piss people off than to conform to all those veganistic views.
Well, fuck Kerrang.
Rolling Stone put it amongst the 50 greatest pop punk albums of all time.
Yeah, you know what else they put on their state champs, which is cool.
I have more secrets than you'll ever know.
I saw that and I was like, hell yeah. That's a really... It's pretty, like, I don't think any of those lists matter, but like, it's just cool. It's cool to see. There's also like, I think this is like pretty well known, but there was like Jerry Finn. And I think it really is like I wish we could talk to some of these guys and talk about him, but like, it's well known that he was like at the time, like a fourth member of the band. And what I really noticed and why, one of the reasons why I think that this went so massive is the thing that I've always loved about the music that I love, which is, I've said it on here before, harmonies. It's that he like showed them how to do a lot of the harmonies. Like, I don't know if they like did it before that. And there's a really big difference between like Dude Ranch and this. Mm-hmm. And it really elevates it and makes these songs like into pop.
Well, I like too how on this album, like if it's a Tom song, like Mark is singing the harmonies. If it's a Mark song, Tom is singing the harmonies. Like, I feel like a lot of bands that don't really have two lead vocalists, or even if they do, like they'll just record the lead singer harmonizing with themselves. And I think that that really gives this album like the actual band feel. You know, it's only a three piece and it's like two voices and drums. It's so cool that there's so much space. Like they fill so much space with just three guys.
I guess All the Small Things wasn't almost on the album.
Why?
Mark wrote it for his girlfriend at the time, who is now his wife, I think.
No.
No?
He met his girlfriend on the video set.
It's
he met his now wife on the set of All the Small Things is what I found.
Well, that's why you can't trust the internet, because I read that it was like, wrote it for his girlfriend.
Which internet?
The same one that you have. But he didn't like want it on the album, regardless of who he wrote it for. It was his girlfriend at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he didn't want it on the album, but like Jerry Finn was like, dude, yes, you have to put this on here.
Yeah. It's kind of like, it is kind of like nursery rhymey, like basic, but at the same time, it's such a massive, massive hit. It's undeniable. But I also think that like some people like they know Blink-182 for All the Small Things and they don't really dive into like how much more of a band they are than that. But still, it's the song that like really put them like into the stratosphere.
I mean, it's the only song I like kind of skip on the album because I've heard it.
Yeah, you've heard it a lot.
So many fucking times.
Well, what songs do you jump to immediately? What are your standout tracks?
Like every one of them. Like I can't do it.
Except for All the Small Things.
No, I mean, it is. Like, it's just like, it's like the best song, but it's also, so is every other song. I think the thing that I sing the most on this album is the moving on. I think I sing that more than anything else on this album. So whatever that song is, I don't know the name of it, but that's like what I would sing. There's also a secret song that was scrapped and nobody's heard it except the band and the engineers.
You know, sometimes things you're just not supposed to hear.
It's really smart.
Sometimes it's just not for us.
I also can't really listen to this album. They did something also really amazing too, where they might be the only time or only album that does this, is when you listen to this album that's recorded in the studio, you say the things that they say live on the Mark, Tom, and Travis show.
Yeah, I love the Mark, Tom, and Travis show.
Like you say, like when you listen to the songs that were recorded, it's hard to not say the things that they say in between.
Of course.
The song, but what other album does that? You know? None album does that. Okay, what are you doing?
I want to play something. I'm trying to find the aux. I want to play something.
I know we talked a lot about Travis's drumming, but I also really think that he kicks so much ass in just liking other music.
This is one of my favorite parts of the album.
What part is that?
Listen really close.
I hear it, but what is it?
It's at the beginning of the party song.
Oh.
Here we go, motherfuckers. Here we go, motherfuckers.
You can't play like one song for me or for that album without me going, that's the best song. Play any other song, I'll be like, that's the best song. That's the best song.
Wendy Clear?
Yeah, I mean, they're all the best songs. That's the one I think that I... Moving on.
So that song, Mutt, that you just heard a clip from, that was the first thing that they recorded with Jerry Finn. They were recording it for the American Pie soundtrack. Yes?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's true.
It says right here.
You're right. No, you're right.
There's three versions of it, I guess. They did one version with Scott Rainer, and then they did another version with Travis for American Pie, and then they did another version for the album.
Travis is so good that I saw that he did the party song, you know, in like one take or whatever, and the biggest thing that was an issue, the thing that took the longest, was that the engineers couldn't set up the mics right. Like, he was just like, which is usually, I think, probably the opposite of drums. I don't know.
Miking a drum kit is pretty hard.
Pretty easy. You just put a microphone on it.
No, you have to mic each piece separately.
That's easy.
You have to measure above the cymbals for the overheads. Right. And if they're not measured correctly, they're going to be out of phase, you just talked about. So you're hitting your cymbals and then they're canceling each other out.
It's so hard. Put a microphone in front of it.
Nope.
But I think that was really, I think that that's really awesome that they're like, couldn't keep up with how quickly he was just nailing it. I think that is awesome. They said it was like a nightmare doing it.
Tom said, I knew we made the right choice with Jerry when I heard the first tracks that we recorded. Just those tracks without mixing or anything sounded awesome. We knew this was going to be the best thing we ever did. And, Tom also said, Jerry Finn is a shit talker. He's the only... I didn't know what this meant, so let me know if you know, get it. Jerry Finn is a shit talker. He's the only guy I've ever met who knows all the answers to the millionaire questions to any trivia thing ever. He knows all this shit, but then he only uses it to down on other people. It's super funny, and you just laugh all the time while he ruins these people.
I think it's probably like if those... things come up, like those things come up in conversation. He's like, you didn't know that? You fucking idiot.
Want to get to work, he'd say, and we'd say no, and then we'd just do something else. God, it was funny.
That is funny.
Yeah, and then Tom says, we chose to never work with anyone else again.
And then they met John Feldman.
The Felder.
And I guess, I don't know. I was like, what's the thing that nobody knows? And then I was like, one of the studios was allegedly haunted to the point one of the engineers wouldn't go in.
Which one? Do you know?
Which studio?
Yeah.
Jerry Finn Studio.
Really? Which one?
The one that they recorded it in. And then, but Mark joked about it all the time. But one of the engineers wouldn't, I don't think they cared, but.
Did you know that the moment that they came up with the album name is on film? It's no. in the Urethra Chronicles. I guess Tom was like doing a bunch of enemas for some reason for his like health. And then it was just one of those like word vomit things. Like you can see him say like enema of the state. And then he's like, hey, Mark, we should call the album that.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's okay. Yeah. They're the best band. I think it also like, I know we touched on it a little bit, but like they're, like at the time, TRL, like, you know, we don't realize like how significant that was. And I think they were not only on it, like as like a band like this for like, they're tucked in between like Backstreet Boys and like
NSYNC.
Yeah. Right. And like, I think they were on it for so long that the MTV just like took them off.
Yeah. They used to do a thing where like they do the TRL countdown and you'd be on it for too many weeks. And then they'd be like, okay, like it's, we got to retire this one.
That's so awesome.
Even though it's still on the charts, we got to retire it.
That's so sick.
I think that was for All the Small Things.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, they did What's My Age Again, which is this iconic video directed by Marco Siega. And that features the band running around the city of Los Angeles completely naked. And, it's one of the most iconic music videos of all time, I think. Tom said, when we were filming the video for What's My Age Again, the whole naked thing was funny for 10 minutes. And then I was the guy standing naked on the side of the street in Los Angeles with cars driving by giving me the finger and shit.
I also think what's really funny about that live album, I know that it's not...
That's not this album.
I know, but they're playing a song off this album, is that Travis plays fucking... What's the song that just starts with like bass drum? Mm. It's like he plays it at like 100 BPM faster than it is on the album. And it sounds like so unnatural to listen to it on the album after.
Well, I don't know which song you're talking about. I'll find so it, this dude. Whole thing that you just said doesn't make any sense.
It does make, I bet anybody that's listening to this knows exactly what I'm talking about.
I bet they're screaming at the radio right now.
I'm sure they are. I'm sure all of you guys are fucking being like, that's wrong. You guys are wrong. You got this fact wrong. Bap, 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 bap. Maybe it's this one. Maybe it's this one. This one. Wait. No, maybe it's this one. No.
Just go through the whole thing.
Am I wrong? I think it's this.
Sounds the same.
I don't. What am I? No. Huh. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm... God, they're all so good. Every song is good. What's your favorite song on this album?
I really like Dumpweed. I like the way that it just it opens the album. I feel like it's such a good album opener, and it just like comes out the gate swinging hard, and you're just like so ready.
I feel that way about like how they open most of their albums. If you ever hear me like in the office doing like drums on my chest, that's the beat I'm doing.
Yeah, I've heard you do that before.
They also like the way that they open the next album, also iconic shit.
Well, that'll have to be for another episode.
I feel like we should get like when we interview somebody, we should get like a blank historian. Feel like we should interview somebody who really knows this stuff.
Sure. Find one. Call them up. Set it up.
I feel like this could be a really, because I'm sure we got a lot of stuff wrong. Which
not me.
Maybe you did.
I don't think so.
You don't know until the internet yells at you.
Until
the internet yells at you about their opinion. They're like, that's wrong because I don't like it.
You need to say, if you like this album, you like what else you might like.
No pressure.
Ooh, nice. Classic pop punk, new pop punk.
No pressure. I mean, it came out like literally like fucking 2020 or something. And it just, it sounds like if Blink was not, didn't write songs about joking.
It's a little less fun. It's more mean.
No, it's fun. Yeah. It's more mean. Yeah. It's more mean. That's true. It's just as fun, but it is more mean.
Yeah. Joni has she says, I have a half baked theory that MTV and Blink's immaturity helped birth crunkcore, which I think is kind of interesting. Like the sense of humor of like 303 and stuff.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that like it influenced it in some way, shape or form, but I don't know, maybe.
But yeah, I think this album is super influential just all around. Like you can be, any pop punk album wants to do what Blink did.
Yeah, it's
every drummer one. Wants to be Travis Barker.
It's number one.
Number one.
Number one. Number one guys.
The number one.
I really, somewhere on our Dropbox, I think an hour and a half interview with Tom that only got aired, like only like
4 minutes.
Yeah, 4 minutes got aired on K-Rocks. There's somewhere in our Dropbox, there's like a long interview with Tom. I had one of my favorite conversations ever with that guy.
Put it out.
I don't know where it is. I'll find it.
Let's put it out as a bonus episode on our Patreon. So if you guys are listening to this, we're going to find that episode and we're going to put it on our Patreon.
I mean, if we can find it.
Oh, I've seen it on our Dropbox.
You know where you know it's there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Guys, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Pee Pee Burners. I have to pee right now. I hope it does not burn. Blink 182's days. Remember when we started Emo Night?
Just said a lot of stuff.
It was called Taking Back Tuesday. And then like Mark tweeted, I don't know why they didn't call it Blink 180 Tuesdays.
Yeah. When we started Emo Night, I was drinking and I had to apologize to Mark because I threw beer or like I got beer on his laptop. Like after.
I think I still have his headphones. Actually, I might have lost them in a move, but I had them in my fucking drawer forever.
Yeah, and now we just bother him asking him for stuff.
Yeah.
But we love you so much. Everybody does. I don't know. There's like not, I've literally never heard anybody say anything bad about Blink or any of those guys.
I saw a mean comment about your laptop.
What about it? That is disgusting.
They were like, that half peeled off sticker is driving me crazy.
Which one? Oh. The Millionaires and Cobra Starship one?
Yeah.
I today coming here, I was like, I look gross. Like I feel grungy. I look gross. I like don't blame them for being like, that guy is disgusting. Like I cannot blame them. I can't blame them at all. Like I also agree.
We got to do another call-in show in a couple weeks. So leave us some voicemails and let us know everything that we got wrong or everything that upsets you about us.
I'm going to peel off half of these.
Keep them, peel them all halfway.
Halfway. No, I actually think that's you want to know what? That's like a reasonable thing to be upset at.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I just, look, it's a fucking like.
Laminate.
Yeah.
Mine's sticking on there though. Oh, but mine's on the bottom. Okay. That is it for today, guys. Thank you so much. Make sure to like and prescribe.
And a lot of stuff.